Hey there, it's John Pryle. We normally don't do this, but I wanted to share a bit more that happened at the end of my recent conversation with Alistair Kroll. We had a really interesting discussion about trust and the future of computing. Look, there's no doubt that going forward, every company will have to build trust with their customers by thinking more strategically about privacy, about where a company might be sharing what it's doing with a customer's data, what controls might be offered, what actions to think about that could put trust at the center of everything that gets done. So if you'd like to hear more from Alistair, take a listen. It's only about 12 minutes, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So I'd love to just spend a few minutes with you on where this is going to go. And I think the overarching umbrella that we see is trust and explaining where we are. You know, you mentioned that Facebook is going after, you know, what their targets are. They don't tell you that. But I think we're going to have to get to the point of people are being told what's happening and trying to find ways to build trust in these systems. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you're right. I mean, GDPR is going to be a huge part of that. The policies that are going to come into effect May 25th. I think that trust is, it can't just be about transparency, because if I give you every single piece of data that I collect about you, you're never going to go through it. So I think there are two things that are going to be really critical here. The first is, I think, what I've called the trifecta of the next 10 years of human-computer interfaces. You have a life log of your life. You've had it for a long time. It includes your vaccination history, any speeding tickets you've had, any taxes you've paid. It may include travel records across borders. More recently, it includes things like your photo stream and your Twitter feed and so on.
Hopefully silos of data that no one's yet integrated together to really cross into the Black Mirror threshold.
So let me ask you why you say hopefully, because if you unpack that, it's a very interesting question.
The biggest fear of all time, mind, is once somebody can aggregate it all together, beyond what Facebook has already done with all the Facebook logons, the level of information that's available to anybody is massive. You just talked about traffic records, vaccination records, medical records, Netflix viewing habits. For the most part, my view is they're still walled gardens, and they have to give me some level of trust within that world's walled garden. And now you've got me...
Okay, so let's keep going with this, because this is the reaction I have with people when we talk about this a lot. So I'm going to interview you some more. That would give someone immense power, right?
Yes.
Who should have that power?
Only the individual would be my hope.
I believe very strongly that we should embed in our constitutions the idea that nobody should know more about you than you do. But that's easy to pass the buck on if you're Facebook. You can just say, well, it was hidden there under security preferences, general settings, notifications, data. You know, Google actually does a pretty good job. I'm actually a bit of a Google fanboy. There's some things that a lot of people would argue against, but Google, for example, sends me a thing once a month saying, here's what we know about your travel from Google Maps, and here's how to delete it all, and here's how to edit it, and here's how to review it, and so on. Google has made a decision that it's not enough to have a life feed, because everybody has one. We have one in Google for sure. And it's not enough to analyze that life feed, because Google certainly has computers that will analyze that and make suggestions and so on. You have to interrupt the user. You have to tell them, I've got useful information for you. That trifecta of personal big data, what happens when big data hits the person, the individual rather than organizational big data, that intersection of personal big data, smart agents, and interruptive interfaces, I think, defines the human-computer interface in the next 10 years. And so when people 5 years ago were saying, oh, you should design for mobility, I was like, no, you should design for interruption. It's the notifications screen is the most valuable place on the phone.
It's almost like a take a breath interruption. Just let me tell you what's going on. Before all your endorphins keep racing in your brain, just stop for a second and let me tell you what's happening. Is that what you mean by interruption?
Interruption. Hey, I noticed that every time you have sushi, your blood pressure goes up. Hey, I noticed that, you know, it tends to be when you're in this city that you spend 20% of your disposable income. Heads up that you may want to curtail yourself. Are you sure you want this purchase? Humans are bags of jungle surplus hardware. We make dumb mistakes. We're subject to cognitive bias. There's this example, sometimes disputed, of Israeli judges who paroled people 30% of the time in the morning. And then just before lunch, when their blood sugar dropped, they were issuing no paroles. So your chance of parole, I think it was 60%. Your chance of parole varied 60% depending on whether or not the judge's blood sugar was high or low. I would like that judge to have a baseline, and the judge can overrule it, but interrupt me. Hey, just so you know, that ruling you made is very unusual. That's a very good thing. And so the problem, the bargain that we are making is we will share immense context about our lives in return for a cognitive upgrade. I could not function without the tools around me. I think most people can't find their way around without a map, can't remember their friends' numbers at their phone. That cognitive upgrade, that right to know, no one should know more about you than you do, is a very interesting statement, because today AI is used on us, not by us. And one of the reasons for that, and this is the end of my sort of thinking on the process, has to do with the economic incentives. Can you name me the top four agents that people use today, personal agents?
I would still throw Google Maps out there. I'm not sure you consider that an agent, but clearly there's...
Well, but Google, okay, Google is one of them.
And Siri, and Facebook.
It's probably Alexa and Cortana right now. Facebook is really...
Yeah, we're going to say the home devices as well, yeah.
How are those devices paid for?
Let's see. There are no ads in Alexa, so they're just paying it to capture data and find me later. They're going to find me later when Amazon offers me the next product.
Well, and they also do flywheel stuff, you know, hey, buy me another thing of dishwasher soap.
True. There's just immediacy of purchase. Correct. Right.
So every one of those, Amazon is trying to get you to buy things on Amazon. The other ones are trying to use it to get better insight into what you do or targeted advertising. Apple, probably because it needs a way of controlling music, but everybody has a commercial interest. The problem is that in the last 20 or 30 years, we decided that media should be free. Things are paid for by ads. And because we spent the last 20 or 30 years teaching ourselves that content should be free, we've also decided that agents should be free, which means the objective function of those agents, if this trifecta, the personal data, smart agent, interruptive interface, is the future of computing, it's scary that our prosthetic brains have objective functions that are not maximize Alistair's happiness. They are maximize Amazon's revenues. And I think that we are going to... Your concern about, I would hate for these things to be integrated. I want those things integrated. I would love to have a thing that understands everything about me, my work habits, my travel habits. Hey, Alistair, I noticed that you write better at this time of day, so I've blocked all your meetings from 10 to noon. Wow, that'd be fantastic. I'd be superhuman. Get me that sooner. But I want me to have it. And the economic systems we've set up for smart agents in the modern world almost always have a misaligned objective function.
This is a fascinating, great macro level discussion. And we're talking about the big guys and the Facebooks and the Amazons. Let me go real a net in terms of trust. I'm a bank. One of my customers has a particular credit card. And I know from the data I'm getting through whatever source, maybe I'm buying feeds or somewhere else, that this person does a lot of travel. I should have a travel credit card. I don't mind that offer. I want the trust to say to me, by the way, John, we do look at your data. You did click on this terms and conditions, and maybe we weren't all that clear about it. So let me retell you what we do in terms of how we capture the data to make your life better. And by the way, we think you should get this new credit card. I would be more comfortable get that, right?
Yeah. I was in the Isle of Man last year, I guess. And the Isle of Man has a population of about 85,000 people. And so I was on a radio show there, which is a humbling experience because you now know how small a pond it has to be for you to be a big fish. Turns out the pond is 85,000 people. But the city, the country was going through this immense debate about single sign-on user interface stuff, like national identity cards. And historically, the Isle of Man has had a bunch of different governments acting concurrently. So it's like a fire government and a police government and a tax government. They're all sort of disparate. It's weird for historical reasons. And I had people saying to me while I was there, how dare they try and impose a single identity on us? A lot of these people, older, more traditional, don't really want to be counted. And I said to them, well, on the show, I said, imagine that a police officer from the police government wants to know if you're entitled to a handicapped parking permit. So that police officer goes and asks the doctors, can I have the medical record to make sure this person is handicapped? There's tons of opportunities for data loss and abuse in there. That what you really want is for the police to send a message to some central system. Does this person's ID get a parking permit or not for being handicapped? And then just get back a yes or no. And the interesting thing about that is that now I can notify you. I can say, hey, Alistair, the police just asked the hospital about your medical conditions for the purpose of a driver's license. So again, there's that notification. I'm telling you, this thing happened. And what's interesting about that is you would now need a warrant to not tell someone. If I was under investigation for a crime, hopefully when I do it, the cops might want to look into my data without me seeing it. They'd have to go to a judge and say, Your Honor, we have reasonable cause to believe this person's engaged in a criminal act. We would like a 30-day warrant to not tell them that we're looking at their data. And the judge can look at the facts of the case and say, yes, this person's entitled, you know, the importance to the state in this case and the prediction that a crime may be committed is that we now have the right to go and look at this person's data without telling them. And if the case is thrown out, that person can see what was done. Gee, that sounds awfully honest. And every one of the people that I spoke to, the other man, is like, yeah, I want that thing. Why can't I have that? I want to be notified every time someone looks at my data. So a bunch of people who were very opposed to a centralized system suddenly went, wow, that sounds very empowering. Because at the root of the system was you have to opt out of being interrupted about how people are using your data. Whereas today you have to opt into that.
You flipped it and transparency is the default. Informing is the only way to go. You build in these interruptions to tell somebody what's going on, whether you're a bank telling them, I'm going to offer you this credit card for this reason, or being told that they were checking your parking. That is a great, great way to end this in terms of a positive thought, in terms of how to turn trust into something very proactive, and that it's not just something that you earn, it's something that you maintain.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's fabulous.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.